So we are picking up the story on financial arithmetic. There are a couple of slides that I want to work through with you before we then go on to the main lecture of today. If I can remind you where we got to at the end of the last lecture, we looked at the concept of net present value. You will see many examples of me drawing cash flow diagrams. That helps to keep my mind straight about what's going on. So the cartoon at the top of this slide represents a typical investment prospect. That could be an investment in real assets. That could be an investment in real assets, a capital project, or that could be an investment in financial assets. The diagram has full generality. That's why it's so powerful. So the general case then has an initial investment today, followed by a stream of cash flows. They don't all have to be positive. That's a detail. They don't all have to be the same, which is why I label the cash flows C1, C2, etc. It needn't be the same cash flow at each point out into the future. That cash flow diagram, that cartoon, if I may call it that, that cartoon describes in a picture what the investment prospect is. And our task is to decide, is it a good investment or a bad investment? And as I hope you are beginning to understand, but we will have more, much more to say about this in the days and weeks to come, we can only answer that question if we have one other piece of information, the so-called discount rate, the opportunity cost of capital, which we've come to label as big R. We cannot decide just by looking at the cash flow pattern whether the investment is a good investment or not. We also have to know the discount rate. Now, we don't really know yet why that is, but I'll give you a hint by way of preview. Companies that are considering investing in capital projects, individuals who are considering investing in financial assets, must always compare that investment with the best alternative. And the best alternative, as we will come to see, is to invest the money instead in what we will describe as a well-diversified portfolio of financial securities. And that's why it's the financial markets that decide for us what is the correct value of big R. When we're going through this net present value calculation, when we're checking to see whether the NPV is positive or negative for a given value of big R, what we're actually doing, as we'll see, is we're comparing that investment with the best alternative, which is instead to invest the money in a well-diversified portfolio of financial securities, which the financial markets decide pay a rate of return of big R. Now, we haven't done enough finance yet properly to understand that. So that last couple of sentences is by way of preview. It'll make more sense as we go through the next three or four lectures. But that's why we are doing what we're doing. That's why we're looking to check whether the NPV is positive or negative. If it's positive, then the investment is expected to do better than the corresponding financial market investment. If it's negative, the investment is expected to do less well compared to the financial market investment. But in order to make a sensible comparison, we have to use the correct value of big R as our discount rate, and that comes to us from the financial markets. More about that later. Let me be perfectly frank with you. I wish nobody had ever thought of the concept of internal rate of return, or IRR for short. I really wish I didn't have to tell you about this. So why do I? The reason I do tell you about it is out there in the real world, many practicing managers do their thinking still in terms of the internal rate of return. So what's my beef about the IRR? Why am I so uncomfortable with it? Because it only has meaning in very limited circumstances. There are many pitfalls associated with the internal rate of return as a concept, never mind as a tool for appraising investments, And you should read the textbook. You should read the relevant sections of the relevant chapter in the textbook to understand more and better what those pitfalls are. I'm only going to tell you what the IRR is and how we can go about finding it. So, provided the cash flow diagram that we have really does look like it appears on the slide, in other words, we start with an initial investment, a negative cash flow, giving rise to a stream of cash flows out into the future, all of which are positive, provided that is the pattern, so that in particular there is a single change in sign in the cash flow from negative to positive, no further negative cash flows, provided that's the case, I assure you that the graph of net present value against big R always has this shape. And that's important, because the key characteristic of this graph is that it cuts the horizontal axis at a single point. By definition, as I said at the end of the last lecture, the value of the discount rate at which the NPV is zero, that is the internal rate of return. But the internal rate of return can only be meaningful and potentially useful to us if it has a unique value. There are situations in which there could be more than one internal rate of return. If that's the case, we can't do anything with it. So I want you to understand up front that the internal rate of return has limited applicability, and that basically the situation in which we can and will use it is one in which the graph of the NPV versus the discount rate looks like that. And in particular, it cuts the horizontal axis at a single point. Now, another concept I need you to know about, and again, we'll build on this as the weeks go by. You might be rather disappointed at how impoverished the subject of finance is at coming up with names. The hurdle rate that I'm now introducing is just another name for big R. The hurdle rate is just another name for the discount rate. The hurdle rate is just another name for the opportunity cost of capital. I remind you of something I said a few moments ago, that we look to the financial markets to tell us what rate of return could we achieve instead if we invested our money in a well-diversified portfolio of financial securities of the same level of risk as the project we are now considering. Again, we'll come to understand that better in a couple of weeks' time. It's the financial markets that tell us the value of big R. For the project to be worthwhile, it must be expected to pay a rate of return that exceeds what the financial markets investment will provide. That's why I'm now labelling that value of big R as the hurdle rate. That's the benchmark rate, if you like. In other words, whenever I ask you to evaluate an investment like a capital project, I will give you sufficient information to enable you to identify what are the various cash flows. I will also have to tell you what is the discount rate to use in your calculation of NPV. That discount rate is the one and same thing as the hurdle rate. Do you see from the diagram that if this is the correct value of big R to use for your discounting, this is a good project because it has a positive NPV. What the diagram is telling me then is there's another way of characterizing that good project using the words internal rate of return. When the project is a good project, and we understand that to mean it has a positive NPV, the diagram is telling us there's another way of saying it, and that other way of saying it is the internal rate of return exceeds the hurdle rate. What about this case? Suppose the level of risk, and again we still have to understand better what is risk, suppose the level of risk is higher, and as a result, the appropriate benchmark rate of return, i.e. hurdle rate, that the financial markets is telling us, suppose now the hurdle rate is up here, a bigger value of R to use as the discount rate. I hope you can see that that investment is a bad investment. Why? Because for that value of big R, the NPV is negative. But can you see there's now another way of describing that project? Namely, its internal rate of return is now less than the hurdle rate. The internal rate of return is the value of the discount rate that makes the NPV zero. If you like, it's a break-even type of rate. Once you know the cash flows, the internal rate of return is determined. It's just a solution to a mathematical equation that says the sum of the present values of those cash flows should net out to zero once you've included the initial investment. So the internal rate of return is determined solely by the cash flows. Not so the correct discount rate. The correct discount rate reflects how risky the investment is. And it's the financial markets that, in the jargon, price that risk. That's just a fancy way of saying decide on the correct value of big R that should be used. So now what we've learned from looking at this little graph is there are two equivalent ways of characterizing a good project. If, for the market given value of the discount rate, suppose that's down here, if for the market given value of the discount rate, the NPV is positive, it's a good project. Equivalently, if the internal rate of return is greater than the market given discount rate, the so-called hurdle rate, it's a good project. Likewise, the other side of the coin. If instead, at the given, the market given discount rate, the so-called hurdle rate, the NPV is negative, it's a bad project. Equivalently, if the internal rate of return is less than the hurdle rate, it's a bad project. So provided we're looking at nice, simple cash flow patterns, start with a negative cash flow, that's the investment typically today, followed by a stream of positive cash flows out into the future, so the sign of the cash flows are changing only once, you can either use the NPV or the IRR to decide whether the project is a good project or a bad project. If the cash flow pattern is more complicated, you must use the NPV. The IRR doesn't make sense because typically there'll be more than one value. Now, all of that you can read for yourself in more detail in the textbook. So that's the additional learning point about the IRR. Let's just say a few words then about this hurdle rate. Now, we're going to talk in detail about the hurdle rate in the lecture entitled Cost of Capital. So this is not my attempt to teach you everything you need to know about the hurdle rate. This is my attempt to preview what's coming in a couple of weeks' time. Again, focus on the diagram at the bottom of the slide. Look at how the axes are labelled. Hurdle rate. Rate of return that the financial markets tell us is the correct benchmark rate. That's up the vertical axis. So think of that as big R. If I were you, I would add big R to this diagram. Look at the horizontal axis. At the moment, it has this rather vague title, risk. In the lecture on cost of capital, we'll be much clearer, much more precise about what we mean by risk. And there's quite a story to tell. In fact, the story is so rich that I can't tell you the whole story in this module. You have to wait until you go on to IB 235 Finance 1 next year to learn the rest of the story. But what I want you to appreciate are the following points. The greater is the risk, however that's measured, the greater is the rate of return that the investment must provide at a minimum. More risk, more return. The second point I want you to appreciate, and I cannot do justice to this in a module that is, after all, an introductory module, is the relationship between big R, or hurdle rate, and risk is a straight line relationship. Now, all I can say to you at this stage is, it's because the financial markets are highly efficient. And I'm still to tell you, what does that really mean? So the best I can do by way of preview is to say, because of the high levels of trading, buying and selling of the different financial assets that are traded in the financial markets, the relationship between required rate of return and risk is very tightly constrained to sit on this straight line. It's actually the activities of the traders that keep the relationship sitting on the straight line. But that's a story for next year. For it to work, and we want it to work, because the mathematics that describes a straight line is a whole lot more simple than the mathematics that would describe a curve, for this relationship to work, we have to be very clear about what we mean by risk. And I'll tell you something about that in the lecture on cost of capital, but I'll leave it to my colleagues next year to tell you more. There's a third detail I'd like you to appreciate. Suppose you have the opportunity to invest in something that has no risk. There is no such asset. The closest we can get to that in the real world is a security such as a treasury bill. That's a short-dated borrowing instrument that governments use to raise money in the short term, typically 3 months. Provided that government is big and safe, so we're talking US, UK, or one of the other major governments in the world, there's very little risk that that government will fail to pay back the money. So default risk is minimal. Because the loan is for a very short period of time, typically 3 months, certainly less than a year, there's very little exposure to changes in the inflation rate. Inflation always eats away at purchasing power. So the money that comes back to the lender when the loan is repaid isn't as useful to the lender in terms of what he or she can do with it if there's been inflation. Because we're looking at short-term lending instruments, and because the borrower is a major sovereign government, this is about as safe an investment for the lender as you can imagine. So, in an idealised world, it has no risk, and it's required to pay something called the risk-free rate. We'll come back to the risk-free rate in the weeks to come. As we start to crank up the level of risk, so does the rate of return that we require increase. As I've said already, it increases linearly. If in particular we look at investing in a financial market as a whole, so I'm thinking typically of investing in a fund that tracks, say, the London stock market, that will be characterised by a particular level of risk, I'm not telling you yet how we measure that, and by an additional rate of return to compensate investors for that risk. When we're looking at the market as a whole, the extra piece is known as the market risk premium. Again, all of this will make sense in the lecture on cost of capital. All I ask you to do for the moment is keep that picture in your mind.